Welcome back to Community Connections, and being the first Wednesday of the month, you can't get much closer to the first of the month than on the first of the month. It's our private investigator, Peter, and I should mention, because he does give up his time very freely, he's with Absolute Facts. So welcome, Peter.
Thanks for having me again, Alan.
Absolutely great to have you, Peter. Peter, we sent you away last time with to try and get a bit of information for us, and the first one was what percentage of the stuff that gets stolen, and it is stolen, let's be honest, let's not wrap it up, of it is food. I know you call it asset protection, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So the homework question I had, retail theft, what percentage food? The stats that came out, that is basically alcohol runs at 37%, clothing 22%, food and beverage 15%, and perfume, cosmetics and toiletry 12%. So they're the most... Yep.
No, sorry, I keep going, but that really puts... to bear the rumour a bit, doesn't it, that people are stealing because they can't afford food? I mean, if the biggest percentage is alcohol, doesn't sort of, you're not stealing that to keep the family fed, are you?
Yeah, you've just given me a fantastic segue into a little bit more depth I've got there, but yep. They're the most frequently stolen goods from shops at retail crime level in Australia. And a follow-up to that was that there's an indication of the most stolen items from small business retailers. Cash is still number one for the obvious reason, the liquidity.
Yep.
Cigarettes and liquor rank two, and then personal property, so like purses, laptops, anything they can get their hands on, rank three. And then the segue that came from that, I must admit it's information out of the States, but I'll bring it back to the Australian level in a second, but... Organised retail crime now accounts for about half of store losses from theft. It has nothing to do with obtaining food for families. It's about reselling stolen items for profit.
Sure.
So underlying the crime wave is the emergence of a sophisticated illegal infrastructure for recruiting shoplifters. Everyone from gang members to illegal aliens, remembering this is in the States.
Yep.
And then disposing of the goods they heist. Gone are the days when petty criminals needed to sell goods through fences, in inverted commas. Much of the merchandise grabbed today by shoplifters, otherwise known as boosters, is sold by operators online where they're harder to detect or track down. The illegal industry, again, this is in the States, but I'm pretty sure Australia emulates it, also includes cleaners, in inverted commas, who strip goods of security devices or repackage stolen items, and money launderers who process the transaction.
Sure.
Yeah, so this is interesting. Many operations initially thrive selling on third-party online platforms, such as Amazon and eBay, where they blend in among legitimate sellers. Now, of course, Amazon and eBay is the US experience. The intel for Australia in respect to ranking the online selling platforms of those kinds of goods would be in order, would be Facebook Marketplace, Gumtree, eBay, and not so much Amazon as yet. And then, of course, Alan, there's the dark web, which is just another labyrinth and complete separate topic.
Yeah, I don't want to touch that. Have you ever, I guess, I'm not going to ask you personal stuff, but we're talking about work. Have you ever had to search the dark web? I don't even know where it is or how you'd get there, and I don't particularly want to know.
Yes, I'm in that category. I have offered to do some research in that regard, and I was told not to bother. So I think it's certainly something that's intriguing, but also I suspect highly dangerous as well. So we'll give that one a miss for the moment.
Yeah, they seem to have trouble though. Some of that stuff is encrypted or something, is it? I don't understand that. But I understand basic computers and Facebook and all that and Google, but I don't understand what this dark web is, and I guess we'll get off it because, I don't know and I don't really want to know.
I think we all probably, maybe you should engage a computer expert to do some Dark Web 101, I'm sure I'll be listening in.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually.
Anyway, and the other part, half of my homework there, Alan, was a question as to what percentage of offenders that were apprehended were actually first-time offenders. Yep. Victoria Police have actually put out an estimate saying that up to 40% of retail theft offenders were first-time offenders. So that's a stat they've put out quite recently. Yeah. And this fun fact that I came up with too, according to the Australian Institute of Criminology, only 2.5% of retail theft was witnessed.
Fair income, so they were able to get away with it because nobody saw them.
Yeah, 2.5%. I thought that was a staggeringly low number, to be quite honest with you.
I would have thought with CCTV. Are they only talking live witness, or I suppose you're talking CCTV as well?
Yeah, well, the CCTV, you have to go, but you have to be looking for a reason or going back to look for a reason. So what they're saying is that, yeah, 2.5, I find that staggeringly low.
Me too.
But that's what the Australian Institute of Criminology's put out quite recently. So,
Peter, do you think that could be because people actually see it and they can see what's going to start to happen and so they turn away because they just don't want to get involved? Is that a possibility?
Yeah, definitely an element of hear no evil, see no evil, definitely. So, yeah, and then going back again to full circle, which was one of your original questions from a month or so ago, there is an article came out recently sponsored by Finder, who conducts surveys saying that theft is on the rise. More Australians are resorting to theft as they struggle with the rising cost of living. So 7% admitted to stealing at the supermarket self-checkout, deliberately lied about items that they've scanned. So they've scanned a cheaper item, I guess, or one item twice or something like that. And further 5% have lied on an insurance or loan application in the last 12 months to keep costs down.
Geez, I would have thought that was higher than 5%, to be honest.
Yeah, I think so too. But, of course, if you get caught out, then it's a breach of contract and the insurance company's always going to win. So I don't recommend that to any of your listeners, to be honest with you.
No, I mean it. Peter, I've just got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Leave me be.
and we're talking to Peter from Absolute Facts. Peter, you were going to look at the funniest theft that you've come across at all.
Yeah, you sent me the task of thinking about the funniest theft I've heard of in court or heard about of in court.
Yep.
I'm still having a bit of a think about that, so I'll get back to you. But as a precursor, I have overheard a number of times whilst sitting in court listening in of offenders being apprehended by police when they're found asleep, in other words, passed out on drugs at the wheel of their car, even in the middle of the road or at intersections.
Fair, they could have just pulled up and fell asleep.
Yep, pretty much just time for a nap, and they've dozed off, and police have, they've been, obviously people would ring in and say there's someone asleep in their car at an intersection or by the side of the road or even in the middle of the road. So I've had that come up at least half a dozen times. So.
Peter, I was reading in the paper now, I can't remember if it was in Australia or not, but in one instance, the police were called, they went in, they found the offender sound asleep on a bed.
In someone's house?
In a house they'd broken into. They decided to have a sleep.
I think I have heard, I think that could have been Australia too, I think, yeah.
Oh, unbelievable. Peter, you want to talk about these communities that are hiring security people or doing it themselves?
Yeah, so we touched on this last month, Alan. There's been another interesting article come up since then, basically titled Locals Go on Thug Patrol. And it's to do with locals in Melbourne's West patrolling their own streets at night, fearing a group of machete-wielding teenage thugs, they say, terrorise residents almost every night. And it's several residents of the Mamberin Estate, which is near Werribee, are so fed up they now police their own streets between 9 p.m. and 3 a.m. They say members of one particular gang believed to be aged between 15 and 21 continue to target homes and cars in the estate while brandishing weapons. One of the residents who patrols at night says locals are too scared to leave their homes and feel they're being driven out of their own area. She personally has had thousands of dollars worth of valuables stolen after a car was broken into on a Saturday morning, described the group as extremely dangerous. If they're walking around the streets with machetes, what can they do to us? Yeah. In other words, fear of their safety, of course. They're trying to take the streets back, so to speak, by patrolling of their own accord. Even though they feel in danger, it's mainly just to scare them off and keep the area safe. Beyond the joke, yeah.
Peter, with your professional experience, do you think that would work? I mean, they're putting themselves in danger, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's fraught with danger from both perspectives. Mm. But I think there's possibly enough of a deterrent. If you're around, I mean, it's a little bit like when you're driving along, you see a police car, you tend to slow down. And yeah, if you go into a shop and you see a security guard on the door or walking around the store, then you tend to sort of pull your head in a little bit. So, look, I think they're a visible deterrent. Could well work. I think if you drove around with your headlights on high beam at that time of night, and anyone who's moving around that probably shouldn't be moving around, you'd like to think they'd take cover or at least stop what they're doing. So, and as this lady's saying, she's got two young children, and the group often target homes and cars during the night. But one trend in particular has her really scared, and that's when they're driving to work in the morning. The groups can congregate in the middle of the road trying to basically stop them and do a carjacking, which we're hearing a lot more about as well lately.
Gee, that's pretty crook, isn't it, really?
Yeah, yeah. And she goes on to say, Ellen, they're single mothers. They don't want to be confronted, and they're very scared. And they're aware that the thugs are jumping back fences, trying doors and everything during the night. And that there have been some confronting CCTV clips from across the estate showing mass groups walking up to homes with machetes and other weapons trying the doors, etc., and windows.
So it's bad enough if they break into a, a home where there's no one home, or if they steal a car that's out in the street. I mean, that shouldn't happen, but, you know, to come into your house in the middle of the night with a machete or a gun or something, it must be absolutely frightened the hell out of you.
Yeah, well, of course, the reason that they're getting into the house is to try and get the car keys.
Yeah, they can't hotwire them like they used to.
Yeah, it's a lot harder to do that, so they actually just break into the house and demand the car keys, you know, under threat of machete or violence, and then steal the car. And, of course, I think we touched on this last month too. There's this trend to trying to steal, you know, more prestigious-type vehicles so that they can have a bit of a joyride in something a bit fancier.
And put themselves on Facebook and say, look what I got.
Yeah, look what I'm doing, 150 Ks on the freeway and things like that. So
it's frightening. Peter, I've got to take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Sure.
Talking to Peter from Absolute Facts, and he's our local private investigator who comes in and talks to us on the first Wednesday of every month. And we're really happy to have Peter along because he brings a lot to the show. Peter, you want to talk about, it's just strange, well, not strange, but at the start of the next bracket, we're going to talk, I've got a CSA to play about family safety. So you want to talk, coincidentally, about family violence.
Yeah, so there was some information came out noting that regions or regional parts of Victoria were actually the worst for family violence. based on $100,000 person quota.
Yep.
So 10 regional local government areas have been ranked the worst in Victoria for family violence incidents. This is according to the Crime Statistics Agency, and the worst was Mildura, where the current rate of reported family violence was 3,376 per 100,000 people.
Sure.
That was 2022 to 23, actually a drop from 3,483 in 2021-2022. Now, La Trobe came in second, so that's getting a bit closer to home.
Yep.
At 3,285.
That's East down Gippsland, more way in that, isn't it, Peter?
Yeah, as in La Trobe Valley, I presume.
Yep.
East Gippsland third at 3,210.
Sure.
Wellington fourth at 2,905. Benalla fifth at 2,902, as was Horsham. Central Goldfields 2,748, Swan Hill 2,731, Greater Shepparton 2,513, and Northern Grampians 2,499.
Jeez, a lot of cases, isn't it?
That's per 100,000 capita, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and the one of the reasons for this was they're saying regional Victoria has less access to services. So for people experiencing family violence in rural and regional areas, there are fewer services to access.
Gee, there's some terrible numbers there. Add them all up. There's a lot of people with family violence.
Exactly, yes. And as you say, there's a little bit of a push on the moment to try and curb that a little bit, as well as some of the female discrimination as well that's going on.
All right, I just want to take this break because I want to play that. I'll be back in a couple of minutes, Peter.
No problem.
Talking to our private investigator, Peter, from Absolute Facts. Peter, I'll just go, we'll give you a bit of homework. I don't know how this will go, well, you're very good at digging up facts, and I'll be fascinated to hear the answers to these, to be honest with you. We've had a couple of questions, one of them being that there's a perception that the courts are being very lenient on crime. So I want to know if you can dig up any sort of evidence to prove, particularly you're talking about your asset protection or shoplifting, whatever you want to call it, how the sentences compared to, say, 10 years ago to now, whether they're just given a whole lot more bonds than they used to or what they were doing. So if you could have a quick look at the comparison between the two of them, that'll be fascinating. And the other one, we know you spend a little bit of time in court because, A, you're parts of cases or you want to see what sort of is developing in the area of your expertise. And this person or the person that rang up with the question said, well, it's been said in the papers from time to time that if you sit in on a court case, you'll very often agree with the sentence, whereas if you read it in the paper, you'll say, oh, no, they got off much too lenient. So when you know nearly as much as what the magistrate heard, they say you'll be, you'll often say, oh, yeah, I agree with what they did. Whereas if you read it in the paper, you say, oh, here's someone off, got off too easy. Could you have a look back and use a bit of thought in the cases you've heard? Have you agreed with the magistrate? We're not here to knock magistrates. I'm not going to jail for picking on magistrates or judges or anything like that, I can tell you. But whether over a period of time you'd agree with that, you'd say, oh, yeah, when I've heard the evidence, I've agreed or disagreed. So we're not here to challenge the magistrates, just as a general trend, whether you would agree with them or not. So if you could do that for us.
Yep, absolutely, no problem.
Now, the next thing you want to talk about, I'm intrigued about, financial infidelity. Tell me what that means.
We were going to do pet napping first there, Ellen. So did you want to do that one first?
Oh, yeah, I don't mind which one you do first.
All right, so there's an interesting Crime Stoppers put out some information about pet napping being on the rise, saying that domestic pet theft spiked in 2020 when COVID hit. Since then, on average, there's been over 300 reported pets stolen each year. The surge has a clear culprit, the skyrocketing prices of dogs during the pandemic.
Yeah, they got very expensive, didn't they?
Yeah, like used cars and a few other things as well. So caravans and trailers and everything else. And, of course, they're saying, you know, the emotional tag for most dog and cat parents, their fur baby is part of the family, and the theft of these family members can cause considerable emotional distress.
I'd agree with that.
So anyone who wanted to follow that up, Ellen, could go and have a look at crimestoppersvic.com.au, and they've got a little article about helpful tips in respect to pet napping. So good on them.
Yeah.
So now we can jump over to financial infidelity.
Yeah, I'd love to hear what that means.
Yes, which I should tell you, listeners, you turned very red when I brought up that topic.
Well, I haven't been involved in it, but I still want to know what it is.
Yes. So again, another the headline reads basically, financial infidelity is on the rise. And we're all going to say, what is financial infidelity? So
you and me are asking that.
It refers to lying to a partner about money, could be secret debt, pay cuts, or even loss of employment, to the obvious one that came to my mind, of course, which is gambling debts and gambling losses.
Yep.
And given that it's widely accepted that if someone cheats on you, as in physically, that is betrayal, then a financial betrayal can be just as emotionally devastating, Alan.
Yeah, look, I was talking to someone, I was at a Bucks do, and one of the guys there worked for the sheriff, and he said, like, one morning they had to turn up at a house and evict the people and take all, or not so much evict the people, but take all the furniture because the court had done it, and the woman and her two little children were devastated because they never knew that the husband had this bill or these debts that had been rolling on and it had been through the courts and they'd said to the sheriff, well, you need to go and collect all the furniture.
Yeah, look, I'm sure there's some stories about that, and it's, you know, and you see so many TV shows where the usually the husband's lost their job and they got tootle off to work in their suit or their ute every morning, and they're sitting at a park half an hour away for the day and come in at 3:30, 4 or 6 o'clock, whatever's appropriate, you know. And how was your day at work, honey? Oh, yeah, it was busy, or I got a promotion or something. So I'm sure there's quite a lot of that happening not on the silver screen as well.
Yeah, that's terrible, isn't it? It must be devastating if you're going along thinking that your house is yours and all of a sudden somebody comes in and repossesses it because, you know, the other partner has gone and wasted all the money.
Yeah, it could be second and third mortgages, and sometimes the partner's signature's been forged and they don't know that there's a second or third mortgage as well. So, yeah, it does get pretty nasty.
I couldn't work as a sheriff.
No, it's a very... I couldn't do that either. It could be quite heart-wrenching.
I was going to say, the ones where they go and clamp the wheels on the cars, I used to often in... we did a lot of, and this is nothing against Bunnings or anyone, but they used to go through all the sheriff would often go through on their Saturday or a Sunday, and you know, they got this camera on the car, and you'd turn up Monday, and there'd be half a dozen cars all wheel clamped. And I could cope with that, but I couldn't cope with turning up, throwing people out of houses because hubby's gone and mortgaged it two or three times and basically lost it, you know, hasn't been able to make the payments. I don't know how you'd cope with that.
No, and a lot of times you'd have to think it's probably gambling debt too, you'd imagine.
Seems to be. I must try and see if we could get a sheriff to come in one day and just talk about it. Peter, we've still got a few minutes. Is there something else you'd like to talk to us about?
Yeah, so there was an article put up by Bitdefender in their Consumer Cybersecurity Assessment Report. And basically it's saying Australians report the most incidents of cybercrime, running at 36%, and that is 12% above the likes of Germany, Italy, France, Spain, UK, and US.
Is that scams, Peter? I don't quite know what that means.
Well, cybercrime is pretty much covering all sorts of things, so phone scams, internet scams, and then there's a clarification saying Australians also have the highest rate of SMS scams, at 68.7%, which is 23% above the combined average of anywhere else in the world.
What, do they reckon we're easy suckers or something?
Well, I just wonder whether it's also a lack of control over the SMS providers, the service providers. That's something that annoys the hell out of me, that you get these calls and SMSs from numbers that are hosted by... Well, let's put it this way: it's not Telstra and it's not Optus, so there's people out there offering the services, the numbers, and of course then there's numbers that are reinvented or reused and things along those lines. So
I don't know if you had them, but I had quite a number late last year and early this year, purporting to be Telstra, telling me that if I didn't, they were changing the Telstra email stuff, and if you didn't sign up to these new terms and conditions. The funny thing was they kept on extending the date. You know, the date had get passed. So I actually was down at, when I was on holidays, I went to the local Telstra shop and he said, no, we know it's all a scam, but I reckon I must have had that 40 or 50 times. They just kept saying, oh, this is the date it's going to happen and this is the date it's going to happen. And so have you had that one at all?
I'm not aware of that particular one, but I'm not with Telstra anyway. But I think what they rely on is the volume. They just do thousands or millions of these call outs, and of course you've only got to get 1% or less than 1% of the people falling for it, and it's a good living for them. They're making a living out of doing it. Otherwise, why would they bother? So. It is a bit of a concern.
It's just terrible. And I was reading in the paper, though, not that long ago, where somebody had been scammed and the scammer ran back. They'd scammed money out of their bank account and rang them back the next day and told them how to try and get the money back out of the bank, I presume, so they'd have a second shot at them.
Yeah, and you see some articles about bank staff are waking up a little bit to people coming in making unusual requests to transfer money and things along those lines. And I believe the banks are now starting to get a little bit more proactive about that sort of thing, and also sharing information. So hopefully there's a pushback the other way, which would be a good thing.
Yeah, I'm hoping to get one of the banks to come and talk to us one Wednesday on scams, because I believe that, particularly I think it's the Bendigo Bank, they're putting together some things to try and get people. Cause, you know, some people are losing $200,000.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the staff are probably getting more wary about when those kind of requests come in, and people are obviously caught up and sucked into a particular scheme or story, whether it's, you know, their own security or security of family members or things along those lines. And once you get that emotional driver happening, then you turn a blind eye to what would otherwise be something you'd look at and go, no, that just doesn't make sense. But when it's emotional investment in it, it's a different thing.
I noticed that Woolies have signs at the cash register saying that if you there's a scam going around with the cards you buy, and they're warning people. And I'm told that if you went up with about six of them at the counter, they want to know why you want the six, because to make sure you're not being scammed.
Yeah, I actually experienced a similar thing at JB Hi-Fi quite safely. It was a 60th birthday present that people had put together a combination. Everyone put some money in, and I went to buy $500 worth of gift cards, and I got put through the security screening about why I wanted them and was I being scammed and was someone holding me to ransom to come up with the gift card. So, yeah, I mean, good on them in some ways. Yeah. A little bit embarrassing in others.
Well, when you're honest, it is. It's a dishonest ones. Well, it doesn't really matter, does it?
Yeah, exactly. You're true.
Peter, we've still got about another 4 minutes. Anything else? Yeah, about 4 minutes. Anything else you'd like to part with before we go?
Yeah, look, Alan, I just wanted to touch on a recent case which might give people a bit more of an idea of this kind of things I get up to.
Yeah,
apart
sure.
from not so much following the mums and cheating husbands around so much these days.
Yep.
But one of the things I do undertake for people is what I call like a probity type check.
Yep.
And this was, I think I can safely say, it was a solicitor who I've dealt with on and off over a number of years, and he's familiar with what sort of services I offer, etc.
Yep.
And he had he was about to employ someone in a reasonably key role in his business, and obviously being a solicitor, there's sensitive information, and the person definitely would have been in a position of trust. And he's basically sent me the resume and said, look, just go away and do what you normally do. It's called sort of a basic probity check.
Yeah.
And look, you know, for under $400, it's not bad value if you're thinking of putting someone into a key position and you're just not quite sure. I actually sent him an email and said, when we were discussing it, I said, I understand why you've employed me, et cetera, but what is it that's playing on your mind? And his gut feel was pretty right. There was something wasn't quite right. And one of the things he commented was that the person talked too fast at times. And that was one of the things that sort of pricked his curiosity. Anyway, needless to say, we're off I go and get onto my magical search engines and databases and things. And as it turned out, he was rightfully very right to be very, very concerned about about this person involved in numerous court cases, numerous cases of deception, all sorts of things. And then his issue was, well, how do I sort of bring that up as a subject? And I said, well, generally at the end of the day, all of this stuff is public record, or, you know, anyone can put your name, for argument's sake, Alan Collier, into search engines and all the klaxons go off and things like that. So there's no sort of stigma about doing it. It's just someone bothering to make the effort. And obviously, again, we have to be extremely careful about mistaken identity. There's been some few cases few cases of that come up recently as well. It's
one, one only, unfortunately, with that Bondi, didn't they?
Yes.
The news people identified the wrong person.
Yes, but as it turns out, I'm 99% sure it's the same person. And as you know, if all these matters were occurring out in the western suburbs, you might wonder whether there's two people with the same name. But when they're all happening in basically the immediate eastern, you know, Manningham Doncaster area, then you pretty much know that you're on the money.
It was lucky for the person, you know, for the employer, wasn't it?
Yeah, so I think the lesson out of that is if you've got an inkling, if something doesn't sit right, then, you know, for the sake of a couple of $100 to not employ a person that could really cause significant damage to your business, then perhaps it's money well spent.
Oh, absolutely. Because the other problem is it's very hard to terminate someone these days too.
Well, it's also very hard to not employ someone as well, if you understand what I mean. So,
yeah, I suppose so too.
You've got to be careful that you don't get some sort of discrimination claim coming back the other way. So it's a sensitive area, but again, you know, as one of my catchphrases is, information is strength.
Yeah, it is too. And particularly
knowledge is strength.
Knowledge is strength, and particularly when you're, as you say, a lot of this stuff. I mean, with the exception of the children's court, and that anything that's been through the courts is available, isn't it? Once you've charged with something and get into a court, you can't hide that.
No, it can be, but again, as I say, you have to be super careful that it's not someone with the same name or a similar name or things like that. So you've got to work in the grey, as I call it, or you work in the grey to get down to the black and white.
So. Sounds good. Peter, unfortunately, I've got to go. I've got to get out of there. I know you're a Pink Floyd fan, so I've got Nobody Home. We'll play that. Also, I'll be back next Wednesday. We've got two interviews. Can't quite remember who the first one is, but I've also got our legal hour, our people from Hutchins Legal coming in, and then I've also got Choice Tunes. So I'll be back next Wednesday. But Peter, thank you for your time yet again. We really enjoy this segment, and I'll be interested to find out what you find out with those questions for us.
No problem at all. Thank you for having me again, Alan.
No worries. Thanks, Peter. Bye.